game. Minds on the game.
All the games.
Games people play now.
Do you think that we could play another game?
The game.
Fun and game.
Game.
Game. All right. Are we on? Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm so sorry about that. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO. Community Radio, and this is America's first, best, and only live board game radio show until proven otherwise, Winner's Bias, a show about board games and tidying up after yourselves. I'm your host, Nate, and unfortunately James is out this week, but never fear, our next show will be James-focused. We had another very interesting start to the program today. Thanks for bearing with me. You would normally be able to send us questions and comments to OLARC, our messaging system, but I was unable to log into that, so we're rocking things out. We are in the last days of our fall membership drive and trying to wake up the neighborhood and raise $30,000. KBOO promises good, undisturbed night's rest after September 21st when the drive ends. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform that's been on the air for 56 years, and 80% of our funding comes from you, the listener. Please show your support by becoming a monthly sustaining member or just make a one-time contribution today. We've even got a match up to $11,000 for the home stretch. That's right, your donation will go twice as far. Or if you've already given to KBOO, consider increasing the amount. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you so much to all of our members and listeners. KBOO couldn't exist without your support. I'd like to welcome Rick and Mary Howell to Winner's Bias this week. They're the team behind Brickhouse Games, and in their own final days of a successful Kickstarter campaign for their game Northwest. Welcome. You got a show there. Yeah. I appreciate you bearing with me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah. And I just want to mention that Rick and Mary have offered to give away a copy of their game Northwest to one of the Winner's Bias listeners. And how we're going to do that is if you email your favorite Northwest state park or national park to winnersbias@kboo.org. That's winnersbias@kboo.org. We'll do a random drawing, and the game won't be delivered until January because it's a Kickstarter that has to get made or printed. But we'll do a random drawing. Have your email in by September 30th, and on the next episode, we'll announce a winner. So thank you very much.
That's very generous. Excited to do that.
All right, so we'll just get things started here. We'll start with you, Rick. How did you get into the board gaming hobby?
Yeah, that's interesting because it goes as far back as like 97. When I was in high school, one of the first companies that I put together was a street vendor selling board games. So that's kind of how I got started. I've been making games for as long as like last 20, 25 years. Yeah. So
awesome. And how about you, Mary?
Well, I guess, you know, in terms of modern board gaming, I wouldn't say that I have really gotten into it until I met Rick. So in the history of our relationship. But before that, my family always loved playing games, particularly card games on both sides of the family. We would play, you know, we played a lot of trick-taking games, a lot of spades, a lot of rummy, we had played this game called Hand of Foot that uses five decks of cards. I'd say card games mainly and some of the kind of regular board games that people have, Scattergories, Monopoly, you know, all the things that you find in every household. And I was fortunate to be introduced to this whole broader world of gaming that it has especially blown up in the past several years.
Awesome. And Mary, how did you find your gaming group? It sounds like maybe through Rick.
Yeah, yeah. More recently, we have just people who are, you know, very good friends of us to begin with that we play with regularly. And then I would also say just local community. We live in the Selwood neighborhood, and so Cloudcap Games is our local GameStop, and they are gracious to host several different types of game nights. And I would say that that's where our primary gaming community is.
Awesome. And how about you, Rick? How did you find your group?
Yeah, I would second that. We have not just players, but also so many designers in the community. Being in Portland, we're just so fortunate. Almost every night there's a game night going on. So it wasn't difficult. And everyone's just very welcoming. And it doesn't matter what kind of gaming you're into, you're always going to find a niche or a group to play with. So yeah, that's making it easy.
Awesome. All right, so now getting to it, I feel like we had mentioned before, we don't know where this conversation is going to take us because there's so much to cover and so little time. But when did you start designing games?
Yeah, I think, when I was 10 years old, I picked up, my first programming language. It's called BASIC back then. And, I was very much interested in building computer games, but they're all related. So like even as young as 10, 11, I think that's when I started to find interesting things in the world that I can model after to build games, and just been gradually building that kind of muscle since then.
Yeah. And so what is your process like?
Yeah, so I think, different designers have different processes. Certainly, there's no one right way. For me, I tend to want to abstract interesting dynamics between people or between systems. So I'm what they call a mechanic-first designer. And once I find an interesting loop, meaning that, I find a way that players can interact meaningfully and have meaningful decisions, then I think about, oh, what kind of themes can I add to it, and then start building out a prototype.
Yeah. And Mary, do you consider yourself a designer? Like, how do you fit into this process? Do you kind of co-design together?
I would say that as time has gone on, I've taken on more design actions, I guess, than I have in the past. I always consider Rick the primary designer and me the primary playtester, probably. But it has been very illuminating the more that we've done and the more different types of games, because every game he's created has been very different from the last one. So it's very a kind of a unique way to think about how different mechanics can interact with each other. And even just playing more games, I've start to develop my own sense of what I think I would like better in a game. So I've definitely been giving more input in recent years.
And how many games have you published so far? Is this your first game that you've published?
Yeah, this is the first one that we're trying to publish. Yeah, that's right.
So as someone who's been in the hobby and kind of along with Mary, is like, you play more games, you're like, oh, I see how these mechanisms works, and dabbled in board game design. How do you make the decision, like, this is the one that I want to this is the one I want to try to get out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think every designer probably would answer that a little differently. But for me, I had to get through a number of milestones, what I consider to be milestones. So first would be with Mary, like, is this game fun at all? Would you want to even play it? And then start to introduce that to friends and family, and start to bring it in front of other designers. Again, we're lucky to have such a vibrant community here, and so that we have those opportunities. And then we go to conventions and start to show people that we don't know and see how they respond to it. And so it's through sort of a series of validation that we eventually get to a place where we say, yeah, I think this is a good game. Of course, some designers would just be very passionate about what they want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. They could just have a gut feeling about it. But for us, it's more, through a series of testing. Yeah.
Okay, great. And now you mentioned a prototype. And so what is that process like? Because Are you just, like, writing things down on a scrap of paper? I know your game, Northwest, right now, has a bunch of custom wooden dice that are absolutely beautiful looking, but, like, how do you go about crafting all your dice? Like, how does the prototyping process work?
Yeah, so when we first started starting to make this prototypes, we did a lot more by hand and a lot of cutting and laminating and things like that. Over time, we've been introduced to more resources that we can tap into, and so that we can get components that are more readily made. They may not be production ready, but they're closer to the experience that we want to give to people. So that's, you know, it's just, but we always start out with paper and pens for sure. But
and certainly with Northwest, there was definitely some buying cubes at a local craft store and using stamps to hand stamp every one. You know, there was a little bit of that depending on what stage of you're in the process, because, you know, definitely when you get printed, published, you know, copies, it can be more expensive to get those prototypes because you don't have the volume. But it's also one of the things that we believe is that the closer you can get to giving the art and the experience to what the player is going to have in the finalized product, the more genuine and, you know, it's the more complete experience, you know, because anymore you have to compete today on games, not just the mechanics, but the theme, the feeling that you get, the feeling of the materials themselves, like all of that goes into a positive player experience.
Yeah, so one first, the cubes, were they actually dice or were they just like just regular like plastic cubes, or are there blank dice that the craft store has?
So this is so funny. We first picked them up from a local craft store, Kalash, actually, and they have these cubes that you can buy, wooden cubes. And then we found a bunch of stamps that we can get from the same store and just a set of them. And yeah. That's how it got started.
Yeah, so even though when we met each other, like we started by like going on dates by hiking and, you know, the gorge and all these different things. So like the theme of Northwest is very like, it resonates with us deeply just because of where we live and that's like our, you know, some of our other activities besides playing games are being out in nature. But really it was that we went to a craft store and those were the stamps that they had that fit the cubes. And then we came up with the kind of more tailored mechanics around movement and things like that for the pieces after we had the theme really settled in.
All right, that's great. I'm going to do a quick reset here and then we'll dive right back into this. So you're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we're in the middle of our fun drive, trying to wake the neighborhood and bring our community together. Thank you to everyone who supported us so far. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate, flying solo, Missy James, and this is Winner's Bias. We're talking with Rick and Mary Howell of Brickhouse Games about board game design and publishing. And just a reminder, we are having a giveaway of their game, Northwest. Just email your favorite Pacific Northwest Park to winnersbias@kboo.org. So continuing with the prototype, at what point are you putting it in front of people? And that's sort of getting into the playtesting, which I want to get into next, but like, how much of a game does it look like when you're putting it in front of people?
Yeah, again, this is different from designer to designer. So for me, I want to know that I'm actually providing an experience. I'm not just testing ideas. Usually by the time I put a game in front of people, it already has some thematic tie to it. And, you know, I've tested it myself and or with Mary and that we've discussed it. We already see the shape of the gameplay. So, but that's, there's not like one way to do it. Yeah, but we tend to want to polish the gameplay to a place where it feels like a full game.
Mm-hmm. I think the one exception to that is that we have some friends who also do design, and so sometimes we'll just like throw a mechanical idea out to them. What would you think if we did this? And you know, talk about that without even sometimes having the pieces. I mean, I've seen Rick go around the store looking for bits of things to kind of use to kind of prototype an idea, you know, and do that with, you know, folks who are more seasoned, then they can like kind of make those jumps with you. But well, yeah, when we're bringing it to an audience that, you know, we want to kind of get there. That's more of a casual gamer rather than a designer. It's like nice to have it more fleshed out.
Awesome. And when you, how much play testing are you doing, and how do you respond to the feedback from the play testers? I'm assuming that you trust the people who you're playing with, but eventually you also have to go out and just put it in front of other people too. So like, how do you, how does that process shake out?
Yeah, one thing that we had to learn very quickly is, even for board games as players, there are all kinds of games and for all kinds of people. So when I make a game, I want to know specific target audience that I'm making the game for. And that doesn't, it just means that, is it a casual game? Is it a more sophisticated, more complex game? And so you don't necessarily need to get feedback from every player ever, because no one game is going to be right for everybody. So that's the key thing. The other thing that we get a lot of feedback from that most people don't think on is to talk to retailers. So we have friends in Cloud Cap and Blue Highway and all these different places. They will give you a different perspective in terms of how easy is it to talk about this game or to teach this game or to sell this game. And that gives us a different perspective that we don't normally get from just talking to players or just talking to other designers.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I never really would have thought of about like getting the feedback from the store owners. I really do want to know about writing a rule book, but I also would rather focus on publishing and the Kickstarter process. And like, how did you decide to publish? Why did you decide to go with Kickstarter? Have there been complications or unexpected things involved with that?
Yeah, so Kickstarter is one of those most established places where you can find board game players. And, you know, we are not super experienced in that, so we learn as we went as well. So some of the but we have a lot of support from, again, you know, friends who are already designed, published and well known. So like, we get most of our knowledge from them. So thankfully, not too many complications. But the reason that we go there mostly is that we see it as a marketing platform where, you know, we can get the name out.
Right. And Mary, what went into the decision to start your own publishing company, Brickhouse Games, which you told me, Rick, that your name was in it, and I was just thinking your first name was in it, and I totally just missed like the second part. Where it's yeah, Brickhouse, it's right there. But like, what went into the decision making on starting your own company?
Well, what I would say is that my husband is an entrepreneur, and if he has a hobby, he will figure out how to also make it a business. I think he was in software as a day job, and you know, he has experience with setting up companies, and I think the idea of being able to have the games be something that could be marketable, and you know, I mean, because definitely the design piece started a little bit more as a hobby. I just want to do this and see how it would work. And then, you know, we kind of got to the point where we're like, well, maybe, you know, like these games could actually go somewhere. And just establishing our own company seemed like a good way to be able to do that.
Do you find that turning your hobby into a job affects your feeling about your hobby? Because this is like one of my biggest concerns in life, is just like turning something I love doing in my free time into like, oh, now it's a job. Has there been any of that?
I think, I mean, that's a great question. I don't know specifically for myself either, but I know that, you know, in my day job building software, I'm not building software for myself. So I have this muscle trained where I enjoy seeing people's input or getting their input. I'm building something to create an experience, not just for myself, but for other people. And I see, you know, food or board games to be similar kind of vehicle where you bring people together to do something, right? So so that to me feels pretty natural. It doesn't getting feedback doesn't dampen sort of my interest in the hobby itself. Yeah,
I think that some of the times are that there's definitely a timeline that you want to follow to keep your momentum going with the game, and especially when you have people who are expecting to buy it and the timeline for the printing and when is it going to come out. Like, and there's a whole logistical element beyond the board game design itself. And I think that definitely handling that sometimes makes things feel more work-like. And, like, you know, I'm sure that if Rick could have a team and spend all of his time designing and have everybody else take care of the rest of the logistics, that would be, you know, highly desirable as well. But it's also, because this is our first time around, there's some, you know, excitement around the learning of how it all fits together.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you find that the design process, the play testing, and the back-end stuff of making your own game, is it cutting into your ability to just have the recreational game time?
Most definitely. Yeah. No, I mean, and I think speaking as two people who have day jobs too, you know, I mean, like that this is not the way that we're earning our income and livelihood. And so, you know, the amount of work or time that we have to spend towards it definitely takes away other free time we might have just to hang out and play games with our community.
And there is one little hazard of the trade, which, you know, I think people who are in film or in other creative medium also experiences, that when you play the game, you're analyzing it too. So it's not just enjoying it for what it is. Even if you're a food critic, you know, or if you're a chef, you probably do the same thing as you taste the food. You think about, oh, how was this made, and how can I incorporate some of those techniques? For me, that's kind of like that.
So you're kind of never not working when you're playing the game.
Yeah, yeah, kind of, yeah.
And did you try pitching the game to any publishers before going the self-publishing route?
Yeah, we tried. We don't know a lot of publishers, but we definitely, through the network and the friends, we were able to talk to some of them. But what we have found is, even if a publisher accepts your game, it still takes about a year before the game can come out, and they have schedules and things like that. So our ultimate decision is that, because we are also, at least I am, I don't know if Mary feels the same way, I'm interested in learning how the sausage is made, so to speak. I want to know, I want to learn the logistics and learn the complexity so that I can appreciate the process. We ultimately decided that we go through Kickstarter.
Yeah. Did you get any feedback when you were trying to talk to publishers about elements of your game?
Yeah, not too much, which is, I think, a compliment.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the things that you find out from publishers is that a lot of them specialize in very particular things. Like, or, we talked to one publisher that has, you know, set box sizes. So, you know, like, if Northwest wasn't going to fit in their box size, that wasn't going to happen for them, right? You know, like, and that, you know, there's lots of reasons and logistics that you can appreciate that go behind that as well, and branding and, you know, so many different considerations. But, you know, I think that not only because there's such a volume of games that are being made anymore, like getting the attention of publishers can be difficult, but it's also because they all have their pick on a specific brand in, you know, things that they're trying to accomplish with what they choose to produce themselves.
Yeah. So Northwest did reach its funding goal. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you.
How did you get the word out about it?
Yes, so many different ways. There is, yeah, we're on this radio show for the last 2 days. We're on social media. We're sending it to influencers. We're talking about it in Facebook groups and all kinds of different places. Yeah, so there isn't one place that we can go to, but
we'd also done some events at local shops, like gone to game nights and, you know, been highlighted. So thank you to all those shops out there who have hosted us to be able to show off Northwest.
And just to give you a perspective, the game was ready almost 2 years ago, but it's taken us like this long to get it to different communities and socialize with different people. It's our first time, so it takes longer than usual, but yeah, we spend a good amount of last couple of years just to figure out the logistics and get it in front of people.
Well, and also design other games. You know, it's not the only one that we've been showing up. So deciding which one to move forward with was also a
That's
big,
right. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, how many prototypes do you have out there?
I want to say different games, you mean?
Oh, no. Well, just for this one, because you're saying sharing
it out.
Oh,
yeah, there are five.
There's five.
Yeah, we made five prototypes out there. Yeah.
And then, like, do you have another game, like, ready to go? Are you ready to get back in this process?
I think so, but not. We want to make sure that the games are in the players' or backers' hands first and foremost. Yeah. That's, we want to complete that. But in the meantime, yeah, there's always some parallel processing. And, yeah, we'd like to get another one out soon, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. We're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners right now about Northwest, about the Kickstarter? Like you said, there's 2 days left. But people should definitely go look at the page because the game looks beautiful. It's got tremendous table appeal and beautiful chunky wooden dice.
Yeah.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, and I would just say that, you know, if people... So it's 2 to 4 player games, and it's meant for casual gamers. Anybody can really learn. The teach only takes a few minutes. And there's promotional videos and how to play videos and all that stuff on our Kickstarter page and on at brickhouse.games, our website. And I would just say that if for some reason people are listening to this later and they missed the Kickstarter, a lot of local retailers have agreed to carry the game. And so, you know, we'd really love people to support these local shops. They're wonderful community spaces and really great people who are supporting the gaming community. So
amazing. Well, thank you, Rick and Mary, so much for coming on to KBOO and for the giveaway. Again, email your favorite Pacific Northwest park to winnersbias@kboo.org by September 30th. And we'll do a random drawing on the next show. And thank you for listening to Winner's Bias. If you'd like to comment on the show or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at the aforementioned email address. If you enjoyed the program today, please support our fall drive by making a tax-deductible contribution today to help us reach our $30,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. We only have 1 week left, and anything helps. KBOO wouldn't be what it is without you, our listeners. I'm Nate, and I'll not be saying James' outro as nothing and no one can replace him, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you again so much.
Thank you, Nate.